Right now, like as you are listening to this, there is a completely invisible wilderness that is chaotic and alive and just flowing right through your body.
Oh, absolutely. It's everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, radio waves, flight telemetry, police dispatch, satellite pings, industrial sensors. If you could actually see it, the air around you would look like a blinding, tangled web of light.
But since you can't see it just feels like this vast, silent ocean of data. We just walk through it every single day without noticing.
Right, exactly. And that brings us to our mission for today. So, welcome to this deep dive where you and I are going to unpack a stack of, frankly, highly technical architecture notes, system blueprints, and business strategies.
And these sources are all trying to build a lens to actually see that invisible ocean.
Yeah, we are looking at a roadmap for something called Thrall Radio. And the goal is, I mean, it's nothing less than building a planetary nervous system for radio signals.
The ambition here is just wild.
It really is. We are going to trace this whole journey from like a cheap $40 USB radio dongle all the way up to a multi-billion dollar global intelligence network.
Because this isn't some hobbyist project about listening to local FM broadcasts. It is about capturing the invisible pulse of the Earth, right? Like interpreting it and turning that raw chaos into structured, highly valuable intelligence.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if you want to build a global radio observatory, you can't just throw thousands of antennas into the wild on day one,
No,
right?
definitely not. You drown in the data.
Exactly. According to our sources, the foundation of this entire empire actually starts with something incredibly mundane, like internet radio.
Yeah, you have to prove you can handle the logic before you even touch physical hardware.
Makes sense.
The blueprints highlight this specific sweet spot foundation for doing this. They outline using an open source directory called Radio Browser to discover streams. Then they use a tool called MPD, the Music Player Daemon, to handle the actual audio playback. And then they wrap all of that in a custom Python service to control the logic.
So you aren't just clicking play on a jazz station or whatever. You are building a fully programmable system.
Right.
You are telling a machine, you know, monitor these specific streams, rotate them based on reliability, log the metadata.
But the architects realize very quickly that if you want real intelligence, say, tracking airport traffic or monitoring police dispatch audio, is actually a terrible format to work with.
Oh, totally. I mean, capturing a continuous audio stream is like trying to index a book by listening to a blender.
That is a great way to put it.
Right. Like, you need the discrete data, you need the metadata to actually do anything useful.
And that is the crucial pivot in the architecture,
Yeah.
moving from audio to structured data, because the notes bring up live air traffic control audio, like the feeds you find on sites like Live ATC.
Yeah, those are pretty popular.
They are, but those sites are surrounded by what the blueprints literally call terms of use goblins.
Goblins.
Yeah, they explicitly forbid using their audio in third-party products. So if you build a business relying on someone else's scraped audio, you're building on quicksand.
So instead of trying to record like a controller talking to a pilot, you just bypass the audio entirely.
Exactly. You go after the structured aircraft data directly. Things like ADS-B telemetry provided by networks like OpenSky or Airplanes.live.
Which gives you the aircraft's unique identity, its exact altitude, velocity, trajectory, just real indexable data.
Right.
But what about things like police and fire dispatch? I mean, the voice is the whole point there.
Well, even then, the philosophy remains the same. You don't record a continuous silent stream just waiting for someone to talk.
Yeah, that'd just be gigabytes of dead air.
Exactly. So the blueprints suggest using tools like Broadcastify Calls, which captures discrete call records with, precise timestamps and talk group metadata attached to each individual transmission. Or better yet, they say you go the self-hosted route using software like OpenEmirates, where you capture the raw trunked radio data and control the whole pipeline end to end.
Wait, if we have all this structured data flowing in, I mean, my first instinct as a developer is to just dump the audio files and the metadata together into a giant SQL database and call it a day.
Oh, people try that all the time.
Right. Like, why wouldn't they just do that? SQL is meant to hold data.
It is, but SQL is built for indexing and rapid search and managing relationships between data points. It's the intelligence layer.
Good.
The blueprints actually use this fantastic phrase for this. They say that stuffing raw, heavy audio files into a SQL database is like a raccoon hiding batteries in the walls.
A raccoon hiding batteries. That's amazing.
Yeah, because it's going to cause structural damage and massive regret later.
Table bloat just destroys queer performance.
Inevitably. So the architecture strictly dictates that those heavy audio payloads belong in separate, cheap object storage. the SQL database should only hold the metadata.
Like the timestamps, the locations, the text transcripts.
Exactly. That strict separation is what allows the system to remain fast and actually prepares it for future semantic interpretation.
So structured data is the ultimate goal. And once you realize how valuable that data is, you naturally want more of it.
Always.
You want to stop relying on other people's internet streams and start capturing the physical signals yourself. And that means moving to physical hardware.
Which is a whole different beast.
Yeah, specifically, the sources talk about using arrays of RTL SDRs, which, for the listener, are just these cheap software-defined radio USB devices. You plug them in, and suddenly your computer can hear radio waves.
Yeah.
But the moment you introduce physical hardware, you run into the unforgiving laws of physics.
And this is exactly where most amateur radio projects just completely stall out.
Really?
Yeah. The architecture notes describe a lab setup where a remote PC, they actually name it COVIA-OV-C01, hosts three of these USB dongles, running a network tool called RiddleePCP.
Okay, got it.
Then a separate .NET control application, KOS1, on a different machine, tells those dongles what frequencies to listen to.
Which, I mean, that sounds great on paper. If you have three radios, you should be able to listen to a police scanner, a weather satellite, and an aviation band all at once, right?
You would think so, but physics is a grumpy accountant.
Yeah.
The hardware has hard limits. One RTL SDR dongle can only be tuned to one specific center frequency window at a time.
Wait, why is that? What is mechanically stopping it from just hearing everything?
Well, think of the software-defined radio like a magnifying glass. It can only focus its lens on a specific narrow slice of the electromagnetic spectrum, say a window that is 2 megahertz wide.
Okay, so it's a very narrow field of view.
Right. If you want to look at a police scanner down at 150 megahertz, and then you want to look at airplane data way up at 1090 megahertz, you physically have to move the magnifying glass. You cannot look at both ends of the spectrum simultaneously with one lens. So three dongles give you exactly three simultaneous windows. You can't just stretch them to cover five unrelated frequencies.
Okay, so the obvious answer is you just add more dongles. But the notes talk about the sheer weight of the data being a massive problem.
Oh, it is.
They say running these radios at a standard sample rate, like 2.4 megasamples per second at 8-bit, generates roughly 4.8 megabytes per second of raw data per dongle.
Yep, it adds up fast.
So with three dongles, you are pushing 14 to 15 megabytes per second of continuous traffic. What exactly is making that file so heavy? I mean, isn't it just radio static?
It isn't just static. When we talk about raw radio data, we are talking about IQ data, in phase and quadrature.
Right.
When the SDR captures a signal, it is mathematically plotting the exact amplitude and phase of the raw physical radio wave millions of times every single second. You are literally digitizing physics.
Oh, wow. So you weren't just recording the song playing on the radio. You were recording the entire ocean of physical waves that happens to be carrying the song.
Precisely. And that requires a massive amount of data. If you try to stream that raw, uninterpreted waveform across the global internet to a central server.
Which sounds like a terrible idea.
It is. You create what the blueprints call a bandwidth bonfire.
A bandwidth bonfire. I love these terms. But seriously, if the data is that heavy, isn't streaming raw IQ data continuously going to just bottleneck immediately if we try to scale this beyond one lab?
Yes. Mobile networks would drop you, internet service providers would throttle your connection, and your cloud hosting bills would bankrupt the company in a week.
Right, so you can't centralize it.
Exactly. That bandwidth bonfire forces a complete architectural evolution. Instead of bringing the raw signal to the brain in the cloud, you have to push the brain out to the edge, right next to the radio.
I see. So it's like having a sous chef in every single kitchen across the country doing all the chopping, boiling, and prep work locally.
That's a great analogy.
That way you only have to ship the finished plated meal to headquarters instead of, you know, trucking millions of tons of raw unpeeled potatoes across the highway.
That is the exact philosophy behind the thrall.radio.agent model.
The agent model. Okay.
The idea is that customers or partners across the globe plug an SDR into their own PC and run a lightweight local Windows service.
So they are doing the processing.
Right. The default operating mode for these agents is mode A, local decode, central upload.
So the local PC tunes the radio, runs a decoder to extract the tiny bits of text from a pager message or whatever, and only uploads that tiny string of decoded metadata.
Exactly. Along with, like, some compressed audio snippets and health telemetry.
And the massive ocean of raw wave data.
Stays strictly on the local machine. It is only uploaded on demand if the central server needs it for a specific targeted diagnostic.
That is so much more efficient.
It is. But dealing with thousands of customer PCs across the globe introduces a massive networking hurdle. The architecture emphasizes that the agent must use a persistent outbound connection to talk to the central platform.
The blueprints specifically mention using a WebSocket or a gRPC stream. For those of us who don't spend our weekends configuring network protocols, what does that actually mean?
Well, think about your home Wi-Fi router. It is designed to let your laptop reach out to the internet, but it actively blocks the internet from reaching in and accessing your laptop.
Right, for security.
Exactly. Yeah. If the central platform tries to initiate a connection inbound, essentially reaching into your house to give your computer a task, it hits that router's firewall.
And then you are fighting the customer's router.
Yes. And the notes describe that scenario as fighting customer network address translation at 2 a.m. like a cursed telecom druid.
A cursed telecom druid. These blueprints are pure poetry.
They really paint a picture. It is an unscalable technical support nightmare. But more importantly, it's a severe security vulnerability.
Because if the central server can arbitrarily reach into any customer's PC and that server gets hacked, you have inadvertently built a haunted radio botnet.
Exactly. So by forcing the local agent to initiate an outbound connection using a WebSocket or gRPC, your computer reaches out to the server and essentially props the door open from the inside.
It says, I am here. Here is an open tube. Send me instructions whenever you want.
Yes, and that keeps the architecture secure, manageable, and highly scalable.
So distributing these edge agents to customer PCs solves the bandwidth problem.
Yeah.
But if you want true planetary global scale, you can't rely entirely on people leaving their laptops running all day.
No, you need mobile.
Right. The logical next step is the device you, the listener, already carry in your pocket, the smartphone. But a phone isn't a radio receiver in the same way, right?
Right. Normal smartphones do not expose their internal cellular or Wi-Fi basebands to developers to use as general-purpose software-defined radios. The operating system absolutely forbids it.
Okay, so you could ask the user to plug one of those USB SDR dongles directly into the bottom of their phone.
But the notes specifically shoot that down. They say asking users to carry around a dongle-shaped pet rock attached to their phone is terrible product design.
Yeah, nobody's going to walk down the street like that.
So the architecture outlines a dual-path mobile solution. First, you build a proper, legitimate internet radio tuner into the app. They mentioned using Android's Jetpack Media 3.
Let me intercept that real quick. Jetpack Media 3.
It is Android's official toolkit for media playback.
All right.
It allows the app to play audio in the background without the operating system shutting it down.
Oh, clever.
So the user gets to stream a radio station, but while that happens, the app acts as a telemetry probe. It sends metadata about the stream quality, the user's location, and signal strength back to the backend.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because an internet stream is just the surface level cover story, isn't it?
It is.
The real genius of the mobile strategy is that they stop treating the phone as a radio listener entirely. They treat it as a distributed sensing organism.
That's a brilliant pivot. They tap into the massive buffet of local sensors your phone already has.
We are talking about GNSS, Wi-Fi, RTT, BLE, UWB list. Let's translate that alphabet soup for a second.
Please do.
GNSS is basically ultra-precise global positioning. Wi-Fi RTT bounces signals off local routers to measure distances down to the inch. And UWB, ultra-wideband, is the spatial awareness tech that lets your phone find your lost keys in the couch cushions.
Add in barometric pressure sensors and motion APIs, and the phone knows exactly what is happening around it.
Wait. If this app is pulling barometric pressure, location, and Bluetooth proximity all at once, aren't we just turning the user's phone into a pocket spy?
That's a fair concern.
How do we ingest all this ambient data without crossing legal and ethical lines? Plus, isn't the phone's operating system just gonna kill the app for draining the battery?
That is the primary engineering hurdle, yes. And the architecture is very careful to navigate those exact constraints. You cannot run an unrestricted logger in the background. Android will terminate it in minutes.
Right.
The solution is tying the telemetry to that legitimate foreground service we mentioned earlier, the radio playback. As long as the user is intentionally streaming audio, the OS keeps the process alive.
And while it's alive, it acts as an inertial logger and a contextual state machine.
Exactly. The system fuses metadata to deduce reality without needing invasive permissions like microphone access. It's not a wiretap.
So how does that work in practice?
Okay, imagine you were listening to this deep dive on your phone. If the app detects a sudden drop in barometric pressure, combined with a total loss of the GNSS satellite signal.
Okay.
And the motion sensor says the phone is perfectly vertical but moving upward. The system can mathematically deduce that you just stepped into an elevator.
That is wild. You don't need a camera or a microphone to know what is happening. You just need to fuse the sensor data.
Yep.
And when you aggregate that contextual data from millions of mobile users and combine it with the massive radio intercepts coming from the PC-based edge nodes, you suddenly have a multidimensional real-time view of the physical world.
Which brings us to the ultimate realization of this architecture. We now have the infrastructure in place.
We have internet streams being indexed.
We have global PC edge nodes decoding raw physical radio waves.
And we have millions of mobile sensor probes mapping the local environment.
The final step in these blueprints is understanding how this physical network actually translates into a massive, lucrative business model. Because massive infrastructure without a business model is just a very expensive hobby.
So how does this actually make money? Because the blueprints outline an ecosystem structured in three distinct layers, right?
Right. Layer one is the sensor network. This is the community, the partners who actually buy and host the SDR hardware on their desks.
And they are incentivized to do so. The strategy is to compensate those hosts with revenue shares or a tokenized reward system, kind of similar to how decentralized networks like Helium or FlightRadar operate.
Exactly. Their payout is based on their geographic coverage, their uptime, and the unique signals they discover. You crowdsource the hardware deployment.
But layer one just generates raw, chaotic data. I mean, a mountain of data is just a really expensive hard drive.
Very true.
That is where layer two comes in, data intelligence. Because raw radio frequency is essentially useless noise to a human. AI is deployed at this layer to convert that noise into structured tracks and anomaly detection.
And signal fingerprinting.
But wait, how does AI change the game here? How does a piece of software look at invisible radio waves and know what it is?
Well, it doesn't look at it as audio. It looks at it as an image.
An image.
Yeah. When you capture radio frequency data, you can plot it visually on a graph called a waterfall display. Time is on the y-axis, frequency is on the x-axis, and the strength of the signal is represented by color. It looks like a descending heat map.
Like watching the green code fall in the matrix.
Very much so. Mm-hmm. And the AI models are trained on these visual heat maps using computer vision.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
When an industrial sensor on a shipping container blasts a burst of data, it paints a very specific visual shape on that waterfall display. When a hospital pager goes off, it creates a completely different shape.
Well, so the AI isn't listening to the radio. It is looking at the visual signature of the wave.
It fingerprints the transmitter instantly, performing anomaly detection across millions of signals a second.
And once the AI structures that data, you finally reach layer three, which is enterprise applications. This is where the payday happens.
Huge payday.
You sell these global spectrum heat maps and real-time intelligence feeds to the industries that desperately need them. Aviation, maritime shipping, global logistics, defense contractors.
And what's fascinating about this business model is the unification. Legacy networks are completely siloed.
Right. An aviation network tracks planes. A maritime network tracks ships. They don't talk to each other.
But Thrall Radio, powered by this AI layer, tracks everything in the electromagnetic domain simultaneously.
So it correlates events across completely different industries.
Yes. The AI might notice that a sudden spike in encrypted maritime radio traffic off the coast correlates perfectly with an anomaly in local cellular telemetry and a shift in mobile barometer readings.
Wow.
It connects dots that human analysts couldn't possibly see because those dots cross entirely different frequency bands and sectors.
So the real value isn't the hardware at all. I mean, the dongles are cheap. The value is the data moat. Once you have the largest RF data set on Earth, nobody else can easily reproduce it.
You own the lens through which the invisible world is viewed. They map the electromagnetic activity of the planet, just as the internet mapped information, and GPS mapped physical location.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? We have traced an incredible journey today.
A very deep rabbit hole.
We started with a $40 USB stick plugged into a laptop and saw how physical bandwidth limitations force you to push the computing power out to the edge.
And we explored how your smartphone can become a vital environmental probe just by fusing metadata like barometers and Wi-Fi bouncing, all while staying within the rules.
And we've seen how layering machine learning over this chaotic noise creates a unified map of the invisible world around us. That invisible wilderness of radio waves flowing through you right now is no longer just static. It is unindexed data just waiting to be read.
And if we look at the trajectory of this technology, it leaves us with one rather profound question.
What's that?
If this global AI network gets dense enough, and it is constantly monitoring the entire radio spectrum of the planet in real time, what happens when it starts finding patterns and correlations in the background noise that humans never even knew existed?
That's a bit unsettling.
Could a system like this eventually predict major global events like economic shifts, supply chain failures, or even emerging conflicts simply by sensing imperceptible, invisible shifts in the electromagnetic chatter all around us?
Well, we'll leave you to think about that the next time you pull up a map on your phone and wonder what you aren't seeing.